Before I get into the sermon this morning, I just want to state this. I won't go into a big lengthy thing on it, but just briefly. When I was driving to church this morning and when I got here this morning, the thought that was just very much in my mind is how grateful I am for each one of you guys. I don't know, I was just kind of reflecting on some of the things that I've been seeing you guys do this last week and things I've been talking about with you or things I've been hearing about with you, that you've been up to. And I just, like, every single one of them is like, man, look at her. She's pretty fantastic. Look at him. Like, man, I'm so glad he's in our world. You know, and it was just like, and it wasn't just one of you. Like, it was just one after another, after another, after another. And it was, I don't know, just this morning, it was just like, man, I'm grateful for you guys. And I just want you guys to hear that. I'm thankful that you are a part of my life. I'm thankful you're part of our church family, and I love you. Anyway, I just wanted you to hear that. Okay, let's get into the sermon here. Today, we are going to be talking about fools. And I thought, I should have done this. This could have been fun. Posting on Facebook and just be like, so go ahead and send names and photos, and we could have a whole sermon about them. Wouldn't that have been great? That would have been great. We still could. If you want to text me while we're going, and we can get specific about people. But we got the challenge, the drawing challenge. If you're drawing, all right, draw someone doing something that is so dumb. I mean, like, so dumb. Draw that. But then you also have to draw the counterpoint. You have to draw what they should have done instead. So as dumb as you want to get, you don't get any candy if I am in the picture. I'm not singling anyone out, Marissa. But if I'm in it, it's like, so somebody doing something so dumb, but then you got to draw what they were going to do instead. And if you're doing the word cloud thing, the words are foolishness and wisdom. That's what we're after here today. And then also, there are some fill in the blanks here. I didn't print it out because, anyway, it's on the whiteboard. That's good enough. All right, you may recall this chair. We had this out here a few weeks ago. I had Emberlyn come sit up in this chair. Dear, sweet little Emberlyn, right? 5 years old, or five? I think she's five. She told me, I forgot. What? Somebody, okay, five. 5 years old, yeah. And we had this sweet little girl sit in this chair, and we just asked the question, what do you think her life is going to be? You know, if the Lord blesses her with, you know, 80, 90 years, what do you think her life is going to be? What are the things she's going to face? And we realize, you know, I mean, she's probably going to face the things that all of us face. Her life is going to be a series of victories and losses. She's going to have times in her life when she has plenty, and she's going to have times in her life when she doesn't have much. She's going to have times in her life when everything makes sense to her. She's going to have times in her life when nothing makes sense to her. She's going to have times in her life when she feels very strong. She's going to have times in her life when she feels very weak. She's going to have times in her life when adversity is going to show up. She's going to handle it and handle it like a champion. And then she's going to have times in her life when adversity shows up, and let's just say she won't be feeling much like a champion when it's done. She's going to have times in her life when everything is, like, she's just making really great decisions, and times in her life when the decision making, well, she gets to the end of it, she's like, well, that wasn't a great idea. She'll know disease, she'll know pain, she'll know victory, she'll know loss, she'll know, like all the ups and downs of life. She will experience that throughout her life, the way we all do. All of us experience that. And then we talked about that, but the way life works is that we are surrounded with, like, Emberlyn's not going through this. I need to quit singling her out, otherwise I'm going to owe her more gummy worms. Which I did pay up on that. I pay all of my gummy worm debts, just so you know. I'm a man of integrity when it comes to the gummies there. But and I just want you to picture maybe anybody that you love, anybody that you care about at all, sitting in this chair, and like they're surrounded with a community of people, right? And you know, it starts. You have a family of origin. You have moms and dads and brothers and sisters, grandma, grandpas, aunts, cousins, uncles, all of that. You know, you've got people that you go to school with. You've got teachers and classmates and principals and school counselors and all that. You've got people that are on your sports teams, your teammates or your coaches or your dance instructors or those different people that are in your life. Then you have all the people that you work with, people that you work for, people that you like your clients, your customers, they're going to be a part of your life. You've got the friends and there. You've got church family. And then possibly you're going to have people like in-laws and some of that stuff there. Right? And there's going to be all these different people that are going to be a part of this person's life. And what we have when we, like, what we have for us, we're going through the book of Proverbs. I don't want to go through the book of Proverbs just simply from the standpoint of here's a better way to live. Although that would be a valuable way to go through the book of Proverbs, to just look for a better way to live, because there is a better way to live in there. I want us to see the better way to live in the context of relationship. Jesus told us the two greatest things we'll ever do is we will love God with all our heart, soul, and mind, and we'll love our neighbor like ourselves. And everything that he requires of us flows from those two things. Everything God requires us flows from love. The Christian life, at its core, is one of love. It is love. And when you love, you get to the other things. And so, like, as we're going through the book of Proverbs, I don't want to see us primarily as being the people sitting in this chair and trying to figure out how the best life that we could have. Although, again, that's a worthy thing to consider. Very worthy things. I want us to think of us as being in this chair. That we are a part of other people's world. We are a part of their circle in whatever capacity that might be. We're related to them. We're church family with them. We work with them, whatever. Like, whatever that capacity might be, we are in other people's world. And when Jesus tells us, I want you to be somebody who's loving, you want to know why we strive for wisdom, at least part of why we strive for wisdom? Because the most loving thing that I could possibly do for you is to be wise. One of the most loving things that you could possibly do for me is for you yourself to be wise. Like, you go through, like, think about, like, how much instability there is in life. There is so much in life that's just going to try to undermine your stability. You know what you need when you live in a world where there's constant instability? You need some people that you can count on. You want to know why it is we should be people of integrity? There's a number of reasons to why, but a huge reason why we should be people of integrity, we should be people of integrity so that the people in this chair, they've got somebody that they know they can count on. I can count on you to be true. I can count on you to be, like in this world is filled with so much insecurity. I can count on you to be who you say you're going to be. You're going to be honest. You're going to be steady. You're going to be reliable. That's a big part of it. I love you by being a person of integrity. I don't know why we don't just fly off the handle with anger. And the thing is, guys, we can do anything we want to with our lives. We can be to that person anything we want to be to them. We can be jerks if we want to be, or we can be kind. We can be rude and selfish, or we can be generous. We can be a part of the drama, or we can be a part of the peace. We can be anything that we want to be for the people in our world. Absolutely anything we want to be. But when we're loving, when we have at our heart the heart that Jesus calls us to love our neighbor as ourselves, we desire then to live the greater virtues because it's a great way for me to love the people around me. And so when it comes to, like, the big, you know, dealing with the big feelings of life, like anger, disappointment, fear, some of those big things, we could handle that any way that we want. But, you know, we start looking, it's like, but if I just give in to my feelings of anger, if I just give full voice to my feelings of fear, I hurt that person. And I make it more difficult for them to navigate through this world. So I need to do the hard work of figuring out how to handle my anger, how to figure out how to handle my desires, or, you know, the big emotions of life. Like, pick any facet of the virtues that you want to there. I work on these. I figure out how to be in step with God on these virtues in part because I love the person sitting there and I know the way that I live impacts them. And I can be a source of goodness for them, or I can be a source of bad, or I can be non-existent. And I don't want to be non-existent, and I don't want to be bad. I want, you know, and I purposely picked Ember Lynn that week because she's small and she's cute and everybody loves her, which makes perfect sense. If I picked some of you men, you're not as small, you're certainly not as cute. And we like you, but you're not Ember Lynn, you know? But I mean, the fact of the matter is that, like, they'll be. Now I totally derailed. I had a place I was going to that. Yeah. Anyway, I think I made my point. You got it right. As Emberlyn would say, makes sense. She would have given me a make sense right there. I know she would have. We're going to talk today about foolishness and fools. And you want to know why we're not fools? Or at least why we shouldn't be? Because when we're fools, it makes it hard for people. We should be wise because it's loving to be wise. Right? And so we're going to work through some Proverbs on this here. I want to give you, like, when we start talking about a fool, I want to give you some descriptions as Proverbs lays it out. This won't be every verse in Proverbs on fools, but this is going to be some of them. So when you think of a fool, this is the kind of person the book of Proverbs thinks of. A fool is someone who despises wisdom and instruction, and they hate knowledge. A fool of some is someone, listen to this one, who does wickedness like it's a sport. Isn't that a great line? That's Proverbs. They do wickedness like it's a sport. A fool is someone who constantly displays foolishness, yet a fool is someone who's right in their own eyes. A fool is someone who deceives. A fool is someone who mocks at evil like it's not a big deal. A fool is someone who is arrogant, who is careless. Their mouth spouts folly. They think foolishness is a joy. And a fool is someone that causes harm to others, and yet they consider it an abomination to turn away from it. That's a fool, according to the book of Proverbs. Which right there, if you want to text me some photos of people I just described, you're welcome to do that. As long as it's not my photo. There, anyway, okay. All right, I got these stair steps here. When we start talking about foolishness in the book of Proverbs, I was kind of noticing a progression. Proverbs 18, we're going to bounce from one. I don't have a printout for you today. I should have, but yeah, there it is. Proverbs chapter 18 is the first one we're going to look at here. And Proverbs chapter 18, verse 2 says, "A fool does not delight in understanding, but only in revealing his own mind." So if we fill in the blanks here, kind of this bottom level, like as we're starting this understanding of folly, understanding, just simply, they're the ones that say, "I don't like it." Like if you come along to them and say, "Hey, I've got a better way to live," I don't want to hear that. Like, "Hey, have you considered?" No. "Would you be willing to think about?" No. Have you? I saw a thing yesterday. I have no idea if this is even rooted in any study whatsoever, if somebody just spouting something off, but it supports my point, so it obviously is true. It was only 10 to 15% of the population ever does any serious self-introspection. Everybody else just kind of goes through life. And I don't know if that's true or not. Man, I hope that's not true. Although if it was, it would explain some things. Like, they just like, "Hey, this would be a good time for you to do some self-evaluation." No, I don't want it. I don't want to learn a better way. I don't want to learn something new. It'd be kind of like, this is like a fool is somebody like, "I don't like to understand things. I don't like wisdom." It's kind of like, if I understand it correctly, it's kind of like trying to rationalize, like be rational with an irrational toddler. Right? Like, have you ever been around a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old that is just so bent on the thing? Like, they're just so irrationally out of their mind on it. Which, by the way, if you ever want to have some fun, Google things toddlers say when they're upset. It's quite fun. I went through more than one website on this here, and let me give you some examples here on this here. Here's some of the things that some of the funniest things that toddlers said. I thought when they things or no, here was things toddlers got upset by. There's the language I'm looking for here. "My kid threw a screaming tantrum when I wouldn't let her lick the raw meat I was defrosting." "My son once woke up crying because paper towels are rectangular shaped and not triangular. I had to fold the paper towel into a triangle for him to go back to sleep." Okay. My kid cried super hard because the moon was in the sky during the day. He begged me to put it away. So, this one, "My daughter was so upset that she wasn't in our wedding album. Okay, have your kids done that? We had a son that he used to get upset when there'd be family photos and he wasn't in them. Like, why am I not there? It's like, you weren't born yet. Like, we would love to have included you, but it was hard to include somebody that doesn't exist. It didn't matter. He was upset by it. Okay, this one. I want to meet this girl. When my daughter was 4, she spent a couple weeks really angry with me because I didn't name her Russell. Come on, Mom. My daughter sulked all afternoon because we saw geese on the way home and they weren't flamingos. My son once cried when he stuffed his sandwich in the VHS player and a movie about sandwiches didn't start. All right, last one. This one's probably my favorite. When my daughter was 3, I told her to stop trying to draw on the dog with crayons. She threw the crayon on the floor, looked me dead in the eye, and yelled, "Daddy, you're ruining my life." Right? Okay, guys, that's a fool. Like that's what a fool is like when it says that in chapter 18, verse 2, a fool, excuse me, a fool does not delight in understanding. It's that kind of a mentality, like that kind of thing. Like when you get an irrational 3-year-old who's just so bent on that crazy thing that their head is stuck on, like that's a fool. I don't want to understand something. Like, you don't explain to me the way, you know, the Earth's rotation works and why the moon's in the sky at 4 p.m. and I can see it. You know, like, don't explain to me, like, why it is I'm not allowed to lick raw meat. Don't explain that to me. I don't want to know that. Just give me the frozen meat. I'm going to let me suck on it for a while. Like an irrational 3-year-old. Like, that's how they think. And that's a fool. To me, that's an example of what a fool is. Understanding, I don't want anything to do with it. Okay, then you go up to the next step. This is Proverbs 15, verse 21. Proverbs 15, verse 21. It says that folly is a joy to him who lacks sense, but a man of understanding walks straight. All right, folly, just simply, I love it. Like, it's a delight. I really enjoy being a fool. Or maybe sometimes they don't always state it in that strong a language there, but they will say enough that will indicate to you that the foolish thing that they're doing is the foolish thing that they have every intention of continuing to do, because there's something desirable about being foolish in that there. You look at the way people handle, I think of a big one of that is just the way people handle their anger. And you get people to handle their anger in a very foolish way. They give full voice to their anger. And when they're angry, they don't come back and say, "I was a fool. I gave full voice to my emotions and I wrecked people and I shouldn't have done that. And I'm desiring to learn a better way." What they say is, "Okay, my emotions got a little out of hand, but if you hadn't done that," and kind of shift a little bit onto that, or like, "Okay, yeah, I probably shouldn't have said the things that I said, but my dad was there," or like, "Well, it's just that Irish blood," or "I just have a short fuse," right? Like, or "I was having a bad day," and all of those things may be true. You may have been having a bad day. Your dad may have been awful. You may, Irish apparently is a, you know, like, all right, fine. All of those things may have contributed to it, but at the end of the day, you still handled the anger like a fool. And you don't find reasons to say the thing that I did was totally okay, or mostly okay, or kind of okay. You don't give full, like, that's what a fool does. A fool looks at their folly and says, "I kind of like the way I did that." Or at least, and there'll be a scale of it. There'll be the scale of, "I love being a fool." And some people will do that. They brag about the dumb things they do. But then there's also that spectrum that moves a little bit further down. Where it's like they don't necessarily brag about it, but they find reasons to rationalize why it's okay for them to continue to be in that way. That's not what wise people do. Wise people don't look at, hey, the way I just handled my anger, let me give the reasons why it was okay for me to do that. A wise person looks at it and says, okay, I was just foolish with my anger. I'm going to learn a different way to handle situations like that. Or I'm going to learn a different way to deal with when my emotions get big like that. Or when I feel lost or insecure or fearful or like or attacked. Like I'm going to find a different way to deal with those sorts of things there, right? A fool just kind of says, you know what? I don't really care if this hurts other people. I got my reasons for why I was a fool. I didn't really stop to think about whether or not this would hurt you, but I had a good time. And if I had a good time, I had a good time. And that's really all that I need. All right? Okay. Then the next step up, Proverbs 13:19. This is the give up folly. It's disgusting. Proverbs 13:19 says, desire realized is sweet to the soul, but it is an abomination to fools to turn away from evil. It is disgusting to fools. So there, that's that word abomination. Like they find it absolutely disgusting there. And it's not just like, and you can see why I'm doing the stair step here. Like it starts with like, hey, would you like some wisdom? No thanks. I don't really like that. And then it moves up to, it's like, it's not just that I don't like it. It's that I love being a fool. It's not just that I love being a fool. I find it deeply offensive if you would ever suggest that I should be anything other than I currently am. Right? And that's like one of the marks of fools is that you do not have the ability to ever speak to them about anything. If you correct them at all, if you suggest to them that there's a different path that they should be on than the one that they're currently on, if you suggest to them that they should have handled this situation differently or that feeling differently, like if you suggest that at all, they get like they're like again, like their emotions start raising, and then they give full voice to their emotions, and they think because they're upset, they think because they've been slighted, they think because they've been disrespected or whatever it is, like that they get to speak however they want to, and it's deeply offensive to them that you would ever suggest that they give up the way that they are. And that's the mark of a fool. A person of wisdom receives correction. A person of wisdom is open to the possibility that there are things that they aren't seeing. Like that, even like they're open to the possibility of things that I'm doing right now, I may not be getting the full picture on this. But a fool will never accept that. It disgusts them to not be that way. Which, by the way, you want a test to want to know if someone's a fool or not? Look at what it is that they're unwilling to give up. Look at what they're fighting to hang on to. And if they're fighting to hang on to that thing that's hurting other people, it's a mark of a fool. And you notice how I make it about them? You want to know if they're a fool? And I haven't done any like, hey, let's. You want to know if you're a fool or not? Because it's way more comfortable to point the finger at them and blame them. That's way, I like that way better. But there probably is. We might need to take a moment. Should we take a moment, do some introspection on this? I don't know. That sounds dangerous to me. But maybe. I'm just going to throw it out as a possibility. It might be possible that as you kind of go through some of the things that you did in the last month or so, when you got upset about something, it might be worth asking the question why it is you got so upset. And were you unwilling to give up on something? Give something up? Were you unwilling to receive instruction or correction or an alteration to what it is you felt you were due? That's getting uncomfortable. Let's move on from that. Let's move on, right? No, but it might be worth it, huh? That's what a wise person does. Okay, so now we get to the next part. So how do you respond to somebody like that who's hurting other people, doesn't really care, who I don't like understanding, I love being a fool, don't you dare suggest to me I live anything other than I currently am? Proverbs chapter 26. Here's your answer for this. You guys are going to love how clear this is. It's absolutely fantastic, the clarity of it all. Chapter 26, verse 4 and 5. Here's verse 4. Do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you yourself will be like them. So, want to know what you do when you got somebody that's like this? Should you speak to them? No! Do not answer a fool according to their folly. This is so clear, right? Until you get to verse 5. And verse 5 says, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he become wise in his own eyes. So here's what you do. Don't answer him. He's like, don't answer him? Absolutely, don't answer them. And here's why, because you're going to become like them. If you answer a fool in their folly, you're going to get sucked into their little vortex. You ever notice that? When you speak to a fool, when you're just like, hey, you're not doing this one very well. How they don't, a fool doesn't just like, well, thanks for bringing that up. You know, I didn't even consider it from that perspective, but now that you say it, okay. Yeah, that was great. No, what's a fool do? Like, a fool's desire is to just create messes. And then when you, like, are jumping in to correct them, it's like, sweet. Like, now I can have a mess with you. It's that, I think it was Mark Twain that said this. It was, don't wrestle with pigs. You both get muddy and the pig likes it. You know, like, and that's, and you guys have had that experience with fools. Like somebody's just constantly bringing up drama, or they're constantly living drama, and they're constantly creating messes for people. And then if you go and you speak to them about it, like, you just get sucked into that mess with them. And which is why some of you guys are like, yeah, I know. That's why I'm not going with my family over Christmas. You know, like the, like you just described Christmas dinner for us. Right? Like, but I mean, that's so you don't. So he's saying, like, don't jump in there with a fool. Don't jump in there with a fool. Just don't. But then he turns around and says, but you probably better. Answer a fool according to folly, lest he become wise in his own eyes. Because if you don't speak up, the fool's going to keep on doing that foolish thing that they've always been doing, and they're going to keep hurting the people they've always been hurting. And they're going to be pretty convinced that they're just fine doing the things that they're doing. And does that or does that not describe about a gazillion organizations and families that we all have either personally been a part of, or we've certainly been close enough to hear the stories of them? Of you have somebody in there that is an absolute jerk. They are corrupt. They are power hungry. They are perverse. They are any number of things. And they keep being that, but nobody speaks up, and everybody just sits there quiet, and they just keep on keeping on, right? And, you know, that's that, who was, I forget who said it, but the best way for bad people to flourish is for good people to stay silent, something along those lines, right? And here he's saying, like, no, you need to answer a fool according to the folly, because if you don't, they're going to keep going on like they think, like, they're just going to keep doing it. Okay, so now we get to, so how am I supposed to respond again? Speak up? No, don't speak up. So don't speak up? Absolutely, you should probably speak up. And here's my point in this. That's exactly why we need you to not be foolish, right? Like, because nobody knows what to do with you when you're fools. Like, nobody knows how to respond to you. Like, do I speak up? If I speak up, it's a big thing. If I don't speak up, it's a big thing. So what I need you to just stop being a fool. Because if you stop being a fool, we don't have to worry about this then. See, and that's the, I think the people who love you, they don't know what to do with you when you're being a fool. They just don't know how to respond. And part of loving them is like, I'm not going to put you in that situation. I'm not going to put you in that situation where you don't know how to respond to me there. You know, and this is where, like, you see this a lot. Like, there's just, like, really foolish ways that you can handle your emotions. And you can sit there and try to justify the way that you handled your anger or minimize what it is or blame shift, you know, all the classics. You could do that, but all you're doing is creating a mess for your people who don't know how to respond to you because you're doing the thing with anger again. You could continue dating those losers if you wanted to. But you know the mess you're creating is not just a mess for you. You're creating a mess for the people who love you, because the people who love you genuinely don't know what to say. They don't, like, they see you in that destructive relationship with another destructive person. They don't know how to respond to you in that. Because in the past, they've tried speaking up with other people who are in damaging relationships. And know what happened? The friend didn't look at him. Was like, gee, thanks for bringing that up. The friendship ended. And like, I don't want to lose you, I love you, so I'm not going to say anything. But then if I don't say anything, I have to sit here and watch you actively throw your life away with this person that you have no business being with. right? Again, this is like, and you can take this with emotions, relationships, any other direction that you want to go. When people are fools, they create messes for the people who love them, because the people who love them genuinely don't know what to do. They genuinely don't know what to do. People should not have to devote copious amounts of their mental, emotional, physical energy trying to figure out how to respond to you. Be wise. Be wise in your emotions. Be wise in your relationships. Be wise in your business dealings. Be wise in just be wise. And when you are wise, you create a situation where the people around you can relax. The people around you can just be a part of affirming you and not sit there like, what do I do with this? How do I speak to them? How do I deal with that? Right? All right. Now let's take it to Proverbs 12:15. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 15. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel. And that's the part that I want to get to. A wise man is he who listens to counsel. Do you remember how we began this whole thing in Proverbs? And it's the way the book of Proverbs begins. You know where find wisdom? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And we use the imagery, at least in there's different ways you could describe the fear of the Lord, but I liked this one for this time through, at least, is when you're in the presence of greatness, like real greatness, you know that there's just time, like when you're in that presence, it's not a time for you to talk, it's a time for you to be quiet and listen. When you're just hanging out with peers, yeah, go for it, yammer on. But when you're in the presence of true greatness, you take a humble position. You take a quiet posture and you sit quietly and you listen to what the master might have to say. You listen to a seasoned, learned, a colossus of a person might have to say in that moment. And so when we talk about the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, how you get to wisdom is that you quietly sit before the Lord, recognizing that he's somebody that you sit quietly before. He is of such a quality. He is of such an essence that the presence of God is not some place that you just start spouting off a bunch of things. The presence of God is a place where you just quietly sit and listen. God, speak to me. You know things I don't know. You see things that I don't see. You have unlocked things that I don't even know exist. And I just reverentially sit in your presence in that way. And the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's where we walk into the room with God, and we know that his presence is a place where we should be learners. Now, the thing that's interesting to me about Proverbs, in Proverbs about the fool, is that the fool doesn't usually know that they're the fool. Wouldn't that be nice if you're a fool and you just knew it? It's like, yeah, I know I'm being a fool right now, but I'm totally cool with that. I actually think that'd be easier to get to deal with than the person that's a fool that's also but they're convinced that they're wise. And because that's what Proverbs 12:15 says, the way of the fool is right in his own eyes. It's not the way of a fool is like, man, I know I'm a fool and I'm just being so stupid right now and I'm good with that. It's, I'm not a fool. I'm just fine. You're the one with the problem. Right? And at which point, I kind of like, well, hang on. If a fool doesn't know they're a fool, and right now I don't personally feel like I'm being a fool, right? It's like, how do I know if I'm a fool or not? And you know one of the big differences here, at least from this verse, the difference between a wise and a foolish person is a foolish person is convinced they're right, and a wise person seeks out counsel. You want to know if you're wise or not, ask yourself if you're open to people suggesting things to you. Now, let me rephrase that. It's not about being open to being, you should be open to people suggesting people, but it goes beyond that. It's not just being open to it, it's you actively seek it out. Do you actively seek out the perspective of other people when you're making some important decisions about what to do with your days? Right, and if you're not somebody who is actively seeking out wise counsel, you're missing out on the wisdom that comes from seeking out wise counsel, and you're left then with your own feelings and your own thoughts. And the more complex a matter is, the more important it is for us to be people who diligently seek out the perspective of other people. And some of the people we should be seeking out their counsel from is from people that we love and trust, that we know love us. And just like, hey, I was thinking about getting into this relationship. What do you think? What do you see? And I'm convinced that we could eliminate 90% of the bad relationships out there if we could just convince everybody to go to people who will speak the truth to them, who love them, and say, what do you think about this? So you think I'm in the right place to date right now? Do you think I'm in the right place? Or do you think this is, when if I am in the right place, do you think this girl is the girl I should date? This guy is the guy that I should date? When you're talking about decisions to make with your finances, or decisions to make with your marriage, or with your parenting, or with your career, like as we look at those things, like the more complex it is, the more important it is for us to seek out people we love and trust who can speak into that. And then also to seek out counsel of people who are really good at these things. You want to be good at marriage, go find somebody that's good at marriage and say, talk to me about marriage. Walk me through this. You know, I've been married 26 years now. I've learned a couple of things about marriage. And you might not know this, but every now and again, I'm trying to get clever in a joke, and all of a sudden I tripped all over. In my head, I had this, do you ever do that where it's like, I got a joke, it's coming, and you start talking, hoping it's going to be there, and then you run out of it. You lose the words before, and you do it and stand in front of people, but you knew where I was going, so just laugh at the joke that I was going to say. You want to be good at finances? Seek out some people who are wise in their finances. You want to be good at managing like big feelings like anger? Go find some people that you know who are good at managing, like who've demonstrated self-control. Ask them about it. When you get so hurt, how do you deal with that? When you feel betrayed, what do you do with that? When you feel rejected, walk me through your process there. When you in your career, you're looking at, you got a big project that you got going on at your work. It's like, go seek out somebody who's done a project similar to that and be like, all right, like you did a project. What do you like? Coach me through this. Walk me through. What are things I should be looking at as I do this project? As I help this student, walk me through. Like, you know, you've helped students like this before. Anyway, seek out wise counsel on that. Don't be the kind of person just like, I'm fine. Be a wise person, seeks out counsel. They seek out advice from other people on it there. All right. Well, that's officially the end of my notes, so we're going to call that the end of my sermon, too. I bring us back here to the chair. We have the opportunity to be a great blessing to the people that we love. We really do. If we gave them people who were wise, if we gave them people who were open to teaching, to being teachable and correctable, seeking out things that they better paths than we are, what we wind up doing, if we're those people, we make them stronger. It is a loving thing for us to be open to correction and teaching. It's a great way for us to bless them. When we don't do that, we create messes for them. Or maybe we don't create messes, but we certainly don't give them wise friends that can be a part of their circle. And we miss the positive gains there. So don't be a fool. There we go. There's yours. Don't be a fool. There you can don't. But I'm not saying that to you. You guys are fine. That can be the thing. You just walk around. That should be the expression this week. You walk around, just walk up to people like, "Don't be a fool." They can do that, and then just walk away. I learned that at church this Sunday. Don't be a fool. God sent me to tell you, don't be a fool. That was the message God gave me today. So, all right. Why don't we close in prayer? Father, thank you for the gift of the book of Proverbs and this reminder about folly and wisdom. God, we know the kind of wisdom we're talking about is the kind that only you can provide. And Lord, I know there's a part of me that wants to look at this discussion on folly and point at other people and like, haha, at least I'm not like them. And I feel a little bit self-important in that. But I recognize that when I stand next to you, you have a wisdom that I've only begun to learn about. And I think that's probably true of all of us here. And so, Lord, would you be gracious enough to make us the kind of people who just sit quietly in front of you and listen, have a teachable heart, minds that are open to correction and instruction, that we delight in learning better paths than the one that we're on. Would you cause us to be those kinds of people? Because, Lord, I know you tell us that when we are coming to you with that kind of a mentality, that humble, reverential fear of you, that you're going to bless us with wisdom. So would you grace us with that kind of spirit? As people here, I'm undoubtedly this week, are going to be dealing with people who are foolish. Through work, through families, we got lots of family gatherings getting together this week, and I know there's going to be people there that it's going to be very difficult to be around them. Would you bless us with a certain measure of grace to know how to respond? When to speak up, when to stay silent, when to be forgiving, when to be assertive. That's going to be a wisdom that's greater than we possess, and so would you bless us with that? Yeah, we pray these things in your name. Amen.